Good morning. One of the central questions of this election asks, what does it mean to be an American now? It's a question Maya Sotora Ng continues to think about. She joins us later this hour. Meanwhile, on Maui, community members are pushing back over plans to create the Kanayo Game Preservation Area. Paige DuPont of the Triple L Ranch details the reasons why. I'm Beth Ann Kozlovich.
And I'm Chris Vanderkrug. An immersive theater production at UH looks at Hawaii 10 years from now. Director and author Kevin Bird weighs in on A House Divided.
It's October 12th, day one of our fall pledge drive. That's the conversation coming up right after this news. Good morning and welcome to The Conversation. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning, Beth Ann. I was thinking about that creativity, civility, and complexity. I guess we can live up to that.
Well, those are very good qualities to aspire to, and we hope that that's in fact what we do every day, and why we hope that you are taking a little time to call us at 941-3689 or 877-941-3689 and take away some of that money that I understand is put up as a challenge gift. We'll find out more about that later. But first, we're going to get into our conversation.
Yeah, it's a great way to show your support for the show. Thanks to everyone listening. And thanks, Ray and Ian at Pledge Central. Theater audiences sit in the dark in silence, a practice that can either plunge them into the action of the play or separate them from it. An immersive theater experience is something else again, and it can be disconcerting to become part of the action, however passive our role. Master of Fine Arts Directing candidate Kevin C.K. Berg is the director and author of A House Divided, an immersive theater production at UH that looks at Hawaiian sovereignty and domestic terrorism in an imagined future 10 years from now. It's a work that challenges and even confronts its audience, and Kevin is with us in our studio. Good morning, Kevin.
Good morning, Chris. Aloha. Thanks for having me.
This is a very bold enterprise, wouldn't you say?
I think so. It's unlike anything that's been done on the island before, and who knows when something like it will be done again.
Well, let's set the stage of exactly what's going on. It's described as an immersive experience, so the audience can expect to be drawn into the action, but give me some more details, if you would.
Sure. So the basis of the story is it's 10 years from now, and the Native Hawaiian community has been split into two major factions. Mm-hmm. One is supporting a provisional Hawaiian government that actually can find its roots in Na'iapuni in the Aha that happened earlier this year.
Right.
And then the second is a united and sovereign nation of Hawaii, which is actually a sovereignty movement that has coalesced in opposition to the provisional Hawaiian government. So 10 years from now, there's a 10th anniversary gala that the provisional Hawaiian government is putting on to help get corporate donors, to help spread their cause to other smaller countries that will send ambassadors. About halfway through, the sovereignty movement crashes the gala. And that's kind of where the action really takes off.
These are fault lines that are already in existence.
Definitely. They are real and they are happening today.
So this is kind of a logical extension or perhaps an exaggeration of what's going on now, but it's a credible future, right?
Yeah, it's based on things that have happened, and it is. It's really a potential future, and I think as audiences will see, it's a future that we may want to avoid.
The whole idea of being brought into something like that as a theater experience, especially when it becomes a hostage situation, how do you prepare audiences for that?
Well, we're going...
Do you need to prepare audiences for that?
Yes, yes, definitely, because we're not here to surprise anyone. Mm-hmm. When they come in the door, they're going to be given a role, like, you know, the vice president of marketing for some technological corporation or some ambassador from a small, almost unknown country. And so when they come in, they're given a role, and they're told very clearly that... You are about to enter a gala. The gala is going to go through a simulated hostage situation. Mm-hmm. You are about to enter this. There will be a gun, and the gun will be fired. It is a prop gun, and it will fire blanks, but just to be aware of this before you go in.
Yeah. Events like this, a gala event like this, they're often these kind of orgies of self-congratulation,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
You gather, you have an expensive dinner down at a Waikiki hotel, and you pat yourself on the back. And everyone sort of speaks the same language of kind of shared support or mm-hmm. whatever you'd call it. So that complacency is obviously going to be shattered by the opposition.
Definitely, definitely. And the playing space itself, while it is going to feel like a gala and it is going to look lavish, you're also going to notice if you come and take part in it that there's a little bit of scarcity in it. You can kind of see behind the curtain, and things are not as good as the provisional government wants to make it seem.
It's a little threadbare, the trappings?
A little bit.
So implying that it's not entirely as settled in as it's saying it is in the event, right?
True. And because remember, it's still a provisional Hawaiian government that has been in place when the show goes up for about 8 years, and a provisional government is supposed to be a transitionary power, and it's kind of become this quasi-permanent one.
Yeah. You're asking people, especially the Hawaiian community, to confront some uncomfortable realities, some uncomfortable ideas, right?
Yeah.
Why is that important, Kevin?
So I was inspired by this piece for two main reasons. One is I'm Hawaiian myself, but I'm diaspora. I spent most of my life in the Midwestern United States. Mm-hmm. So growing up, knowing that I was part of this culture, knowing that there were these beliefs that went with this culture, it really drove me, which was a big reason, it drove me to come back and get my master's degree here.
Yeah.
To kind of get back in touch with that. And coming here with fresh eyes, seeing that the things that I was told about that were happening, the cycles of bitterness and hurt and fighting that occurred during the Hawaiian Renaissance is still happening. The cycles are still going. So coming in with those eyes, it's a question that I raise. And then the second thing was I was watching my son play. He was about one last year, and I was watching him play, and the thought struck me, he will not know what it's like to live in a pre-9/11 world.
That's right.
He will not know what it's like to not constantly be fed news of terrorism and news of school shootings.
It's a new age of anxiety, isn't it?
It is. So what happens when these kids that grow up, they have an ideal, they have something they want to fight for,
yeah.
And they think maybe violence is an okay way to get to it.
It's a frightening thought. Thanks very much for coming in.
Thank you.
Master of Fine Arts directing candidate Kevin C.K. Berg is the director and author of A House Divided, an immersive theater production that runs October 19th through the 23rd at the Earl Ernst Lab Theater on the UH campus. And you can get details on our Hawaii Conversation Facebook page.
And thank you, Ray. Now, not long ago, signs went up in the Maui community of Kanayo where lots of no's were written on them. No camping, no alcohol, no off-road vehicles, just to name a few. The signs left many residents wondering why. They feared it might mean that beach-accessible property where some still live off the land might soon be restricted. The land is an 8,000-acre lot, of which almost 6,000 acres belong to the state. It could become a hunting and game reserve, according to the Department of Land and Natural Resources. But as the state contemplates the reserve to promote legal hunting, some community members are also concerned about safety. Paige DuPont is one of them, and she joins us now by phone. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you today?
I'm doing well, thanks, and thanks for joining us. This is something that we're told is still in the preliminary stage, but it has a lot of people riled up beyond just, you know, a cursory concern. What specifically has you really upset and with a lot of the other community members in terms of what some other community members say is a real necessity for the community?
Well, first of all, they're saying that this is something that's in the preliminary stages. However, doing our research, we have found out that they began discussions on this in 2008. They took it to a very small selection of individuals in 2013 and then passed through for silent bidding approval in 2015. So this is something they have been working on for quite some time without letting the public know. They have kept it under wraps and have denied anybody the ability to lease any of the portions that are surrounding there for their protection. So that is a concern. We did have a community meeting and asked questions about what their intentions were. The community unanimously stated, no, this is not what they want in their community. And the main reason why is because, you know, the area backs the community, and in and around this 8,000 acres, they told us 5,900 acres, there are hundreds of private land owners and families, and not just the community that is surrounding it that could be shot. They're talking about using silent arrows, which are very dangerous. You won't even know that it's coming. But it's right in the middle of a road that goes from, you know, the Kanayo community, which a lot of people use, to get down to Kanayo Beach, which is a beautiful, pristine, untouched, very historical and cultural area where there are a lot of family remains. It's been used not just by the community, but by all of Maui as a special place that they love and protect, and they fish. And a lot of people sustain their homes with hunting and fishing throughout this area and protecting the environment. You know, we're talking about allowing people to come into our backyard and carry weapons, guns, and these silent New Age arrows, and shoot them as people, you know, live in the crossfire or drive down to the beach in the crossfire, and they're saying, well, that's not going to happen. You know, we're going to have hours where you can have access. Well, wait a minute. We've had access down to the beach for centuries, and this area has been protected. We know where all of the
Paige,
sites
can I just,
that need to be protected.
Let me just stop you a little bit, because I know I can just feel how much this is living in your gut when you talk about this. But you brought up a lot of different issues. You brought up issues of safety and liability and those who would, you know, have the right to be going to a beach, to have the access to the beach, to be able to live off the land as some have been doing. All of those cultural uses, all of that seemed to would be directly opposed to what the Department of Land and Natural Resources, you know, might want to have in terms of a fight on its hand. How prepared are you to fight?
Oh, we're ready to fight, definitely. I mean, we've already contacted several different agencies that are looking into this, including the Hawaiian Affairs, OHAD, Ahumoku. We've gone to the Kingdom of Hawaii. This weekend, we have the ambassador for the Moluccas, who speaks on the behalf of the Kingdom of Hawaii, talking to the United Nations about this. It's a civil liberties and also an international law issue at the moment. So this is huge. It's not just about the Kanayo community, which is peaceful and lives with the land and has just done so for centuries, protecting their historical and cultural sites and rights. But it pertains to all of the rights that are being infringed upon right now.
So you're talking about a precedent. You're talking about a precedent that could be set.
Yes. Yes, they can't just keep taking rights away from people. And, you know, there's questions about who owns the land. I mean, none of these things have been settled. And And the DLNR, you know, they have a job that is supposed to be agents for the people to protect resources. And in this plan, which we have reviewed extensively, they say they do this for conservation, and yet they're bringing in and want to seed the area with destructive animals. They're talking about bringing in deer and bringing in feral goats and giving them water. They're going to bring water in for animals when there have been people in this community who have waited 30 or more years to have water to their homes.
Paige?
They talk about
Yeah, I'm really sorry. We're going to have to go. That's part of what's been happening with the pledge drive. The show's a little bit shorter, and so please, my apologies. But we will check back in with you as this continues, because very clearly you are set to take this on in a lot of very large ways. Thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Okay, thank you.
Paige DuPont owns the Triple L Ranch and Bully's Burgers in Kanaio, Maui. Her conservation efforts include work with the Kanaio Native Hawaiian Reforestation Project and the proposed Kanaio Game Management Area. We've been told is in the preliminary stage. That's not the understanding of Paige DuPont.
Support for today's programming comes from the Hawaii Opera Theater presentation of Puccini's La Boheme, opening 8 p.m. this Friday at the Blaisdell. Tickets at hawaiiopera.org or 596-7858.
Unihua, ulehua, unihau, ukaua, uahu, umulokai. Ulana, umau, ukaholabe, uhavai.
In today's Backyard Quiz, we're thinking about a novelist who based his successful first novel on his military experiences in Hawaii. In the years before the Second World War, he served in the Hawaiian Division, a part of the Army dedicated to the defense of Hawaii. And his novel was loosely based on his own experiences here, focused on a group of soldiers at Schofield Barracks in the months leading up to the Pearl Harbor attack. His debut novel won the National Book Award and was named one of the 100 best novels of the 20th century by the Modern Library Board. It was later made into a hit film, a television show, and even a stage musical. This morning, we're looking for the name of the author, not the book, and we'll be back with it in a half hour.
Support for the conversation comes from Fran Butera at Foodscapes Hawaii, helping Hawaii residents grow organic kitchen gardens at their home, school, or business. FoodscapesHawaii.com. Support for today's programming comes from Farm Lovers Markets at Kaka'ako, presenting the third annual Coffee Fest with coffee growers, chef tastings, Brewing Methodology 101, and more, 8 a.m. to noon this Saturday at Ward Warehouse.
Thanks very much, Ray. Now, there's a report out saying that veterans are faring better in Hawaii, but all that said, there's still some more work to be done. With today's reality check, Chad Blair joins us now. You know, we talked with Amy Rolfs from the Public Affairs Office for the VA Pacific Islands Healthcare System, and she said that, you know, we've been hiring more people, we've been doing much better, looking at some of the reports that came out of, national federal reports about the VA, looking specifically at Hawaii, our times look better. All of that sounds like we've done a good job of being able to increase the reliability and the quality of care for veterans. But there's always better, which seems to be the point of this report.
Right. So remember 2 years ago, all those news reports about widespread problems in the VA nationally. And of course, Hawaii, considered one of the worst in terms of veterans care, as long as 185 days for veterans to see a doctor. I mean, that's an incredible wait time. So this new report that came out, it's from the Inspector General for the VA. It was actually ordered at the request of Mazie Hirono, the senator sits on Armed Services, and it found some good things and some bad things. Let me highlight the good. We'll start with the good. Staffing is, in fact, up 24%. at community-based health centers. And we're talking about the Pacific region, which includes Hawaii, but also Guam and American Samoa. And also about three-fourths of patients now say it only took them about 30 days for these veterans to see a doctor. That's all good news. Finally, expanded veteran services significantly for homeless veterans. So there's the positive. But that isn't to say that there were some negative things that came in this new report as well. And I will share those with you now.
Well, you know, because we had a look at the report, and it seems like this is a work in progress. But that's not the fact that, you know, we have some negatives. So go ahead. Hit us with a negative.
Right. And the Senator Hirono said as much. Here's a big fail. The VA was supposed to establish a community services center in Windward, Oahu. That has not happened. Over the last 2 years, three veterans in the region committed suicide. That underscores the need for improved suicide prevention efforts. And if you're living on the neighbor islands and you're a veteran, there are still challenges logistical in trying to get to Oahu for care and to get reimbursement costs from the VA. These are all concerns that need to be worked on going forward.
And at this point, what is scheduled to work on those concerns?
Well, the VA is going to be looking at it. Senator Hirono obviously will be bringing this up in the course of her duty. You know, one of the concerns I should also add is the Veterans Office in Atlanta is the one that handles decisions on whether you are qualified or not. Well, that's 5 or 6 hours away from us. That's a concern as well. So these are the kind of things that Hirono says she'd like to address.
We're really looking at issues of what is too far, whether it's a neighbor island or whether it's having to call Atlanta. All right. We'll see how this develops. Thanks, Chad.
Thanks, Beth Ann.
Chad Blair reports for Civil Beat and joins us every day with a reality check.
Support for Hawaii Public Radio comes from Tory Richard Limited, celebrating 60 years of design for the island lifestyle. Tory Richard is proud to support local community news, public affairs, and talk programming on Hawaii Public Radio.
In today's Backyard Quiz, we were reminded of a novel set in Hawaii in the months before the 1941 Pearl Harbor attack. From Here to Eternity was published in 1951 and was a huge success, winning the prestigious National Book Award. It was made into a hit film starring Montgomery Clift, Burt Lancaster, Deborah Carr, Frank Sinatra, and Ernest Borgnine. Its beachside love scene between Lancaster and Deborah Carr, shot at Halona Beach Cove on Oahu's southeast shore, may look tame by current standards, but was considered pretty racy at the time. The title of the book and movie came from Rudyard Kipling's poem, Gentlemen Rankers. Gentlemen rankers out on a spree, damned from here to eternity. God have mercy on such as we. And the author of the novel was James Jones, and that was our quiz question for today.
Which Dave Kavika Wilder happened to know. He phoned in and will be receiving a t-shirt.
All right. Good for him.
And if you've got a backyard quiz for us, you can always send it in to talkback@hawaiipublicradio.org and we'll take a look at it and you just might hear it on a future show. If there's one thing we've observed during this election cycle, it's just how fragmented America has become. Through whatever lens you choose, it's clear America has been redefining itself. So what does it mean to be an American now? And what does that affiliation mean if you live in Hawaii? As part of the NPR initiative, A Nation Engaged, we're asking those questions of Maya Sotoraing, who joins us now. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much for having me, Beth Ann and Chris.
We talk about this a lot, and we've been asking this question on this program for quite some time at appropriate times of the year when we have very patriotic things happening and looking at how we have changed as Americans. What do you see?
I don't know that we have changed in terms of our complexity, but I think that we have changed in our need to acknowledge that complexity. I think that it is time to really see that people can be aligned and affiliated with more than one definition of America. So you can have people who care very much about, you know, the culture of their grandparents, their roots, whether that, you know, they reside in Puerto Rico or Pakistan or Somalia, but who also feel very proud and committed to this notion of complex, multi-layered, interesting, and thoughtful America. And here in Hawaii, we can have people who feel very strongly about their Kanaka identity, but who also need to have a place at the table when discussing federal and national culture, tapestry, and entitlements.
We hear a phrase a lot, especially during political seasons on the federal level, the American people. But we have to ask that question of, you know, who does that include? And from what you've just said about who may or may not have been included or how we have viewed Americanism in past, and from what we have been seeing happen on our streets across the nation, a lot of discussion here in Hawaii because we act a little bit differently. How do we approach this idea of being part of something called the American people?
Yeah, I think that we have to lean into our discomfort and try not to oversimplify and have very simplistic definitions of what it means to be American. I think that the great gift of being American is that we have the right and the opportunity to sort of name ourselves, to define who we are. To me, the American dream is the capacity to contain multitudes and also to build something from whatever raw material we are given. And it would be a shame to take away that right. And I do see that people are shut down or criticized if they have complex understandings. Recently went to the opening of the Smithsonian National Museum of African American History and Culture. It was a great privilege to be there. While I was there, they conjured, of course, Langston Hughes' poem, I Too, which speaks to the fact that, you know, I too am America, that someday my beauty will be recognized and I'll be invited to sit at the table. And I remember doing this project with my students in New York and in Hawaii, where we explored what it means to be American by looking at the sights, sounds, conversation, language, textures of their own neighborhoods.
What did they say?
And what you saw was a real recognition of the great beauty and bounty of their own backyards. They understood, perhaps in some cases for the first time, that what they experienced was as legitimate a version of America, that it was as powerful, that it deserved recognition. And I think that right now we all need to be peace builders in inviting and opening up you know, broader and deeper definitions and a wider variety of spaces to have conversations about who we are as Americans. You know, obviously voting is a big part of that process, but it requires more than voting in November. It really does require that we see civic engagement more broadly as service, as discussion, as artistry, everyone contributing their voice, which is so possible now through blogs or websites, through multimedia. And this notion of kind of at this moment when things are tough, finding our moral compass and really, you know, really thinking about building a vision of America that is inclusive, that is compassionate, that is thoughtful, that welcomes dialogue, it has never been more important.
We have to go in just a second, but as you talk about leaning into the discomfort of having these conversations, in Hawaii we kind of live in this culture of nice, where we don't bring up a lot of the things, because sometimes we realize, well, we're all here together, but yet a lot of these issues that happen, we talk about issues of racism here, and a lot of people, you know, you can feel them bristle when you say that, and yet there's also that spark of recognition. How do we start to have those conversations here when we have sort of this myth of what it means to live in Hawaii?
I think that's a very good question. And I think there are aspects of that narrative that are true. I think that we can maybe harness the very best of what it means to be American here in Hawaii by you know, opening up to, you know, aloha, real aloha, as something that means that we trust each other to have these difficult conversations and to challenge one another, but in a way that is safe and that acknowledges universal needs and with kindness.
I wish we had a lot more time to talk. We'll have to do this in a longer talk form.
Let's do that. Mahalo.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Maya Sotora Ng is the Director of Community Outreach and Global Learning at the Matsunaga Institute for Peace and Conflict Resolution. She has taught the humanities at public charter and independent secondary schools in Hawaii and New York. She also taught undergraduate and graduate courses in multicultural education, social studies methods, and peace education at the UH College of Education. She's an author and the co-founder of two nonprofits, Our Public School and Seeds of Peace.
Beth Ann, there's little doubt that we're seeing a divided nation as this election cycle continues, but it does make you wonder which of our values we are going to hold on to, because we really are in a fragmented time right now.
But with opportunities to not be so much, if,
exactly,
as Maya suggested a moment ago, we're willing to have some of those difficult conversations and see really what is it that binds us, as opposed to all the things that we believe divide us. That's going to do it for us for this morning. We're going to go back to Pledge Central and find out how we're doing on day one of the fall pledge drive. Take it away there,